My so-called beet life.
Well, we're spending the first hour of the Sunday Grill going through the results of our beet life survey conducted by Spark Market Research and co-funded by Cumasún na Mban. We set out to understand young people's attitudes, behaviours and thoughts post-COVID, everything from screen time, education stress, mental health, to recognising Mr. Beast more than the tarnished Micheál Martin. It's all in there, and here in studio to help us go through the results is Anne O'Dwyer from Spark Market Research. Lily Kennedy's also here. She's a third level student from County Waterford, and Jack Collier, who's a recent graduate of DCU, is going to be joining us on the phone. And later on, we'll be talking to a member of Jigsaw, the National Centre for Youth Mental Health in Ireland. But first, let's have a listen to some young people from the Beat Life survey and what they feel about life post-COVID.
For me, COVID has pretty much screwed up a lot of things. Like work-wise, I had to find new jobs and everything. I had to change the industry altogether. Like my hobbies and everything, like I'm definitely less active now. Mental health has definitely gone worse over the years. Like I don't talk to nearly as many people as I used to during COVID. Like, you know,
the way Ireland is right now, I believe that it's not desirable for young individuals or young couples or the younger generation for wanting to live here with the cost of housing, the cost of living rising. People are generally migrating out of the country.
This year is feeling like my year, so things are getting better, finally. Cost of living is a problem, yes. Housing, yeah. I'm very lucky to have this room to myself. It's difficult. My mental health state, I'm in an area of healing right now.
Ireland now, kind of in a tricky sitch, I think. I'm not really happy with the way the economy is going. I'm seeing a lot of people my age moving to Australia, like moving to other countries, like freshly graduated, freshly educated, and, you know, all that, like, investment that the country has done, and, like, another country is reaping the benefits of that, and, like, it's not really at the fault of the people who are going, you know. No great amount of hope for a future here at the moment.
My so-called beat life.
So lots of thoughts there on mental health, cost of living and emigration. And we're going to break down and comment on those findings as we work through the survey. But Anne O'Dwyer, as I said, is here from Spark Market Research, and they surveyed 18 to 28-year-olds. Tell us a little bit about what you did.
So, yeah, like we said, we surveyed 18 to 28-year-olds. We kind of did half the survey was based in the southeast, and then half was the rest of Ireland, just to kind of get a feel for the kind of rest of the country, as well as obviously focusing on people that are relevant to BEAT, I suppose. And yeah, I think the overall takeaway is it's a bit of a grim outlook. You know, there's some funny stuff in there, the Mr. Beast and Micheál Martin stuff. But yeah, it was a little bit harrowing going through it and taking out those kind of the vox pops and things that people typed in, the verbatims. You know, it's not a great outlook of what the situation is in the country at the moment.
So you asked people to articulate their feelings basically on different subjects. And yeah, as you said, there was a lot of negative feelings, but some positivity in there as well. Will we start with education and 18 to 28-year-olds' academic experience? And Lily Kennedy is here in studio. She's just finished her first year in Maynooth. What are you doing in Maynooth, Lily?
I'm currently doing media studies. I just finished my first year there. So it's a three-year degree. And yeah, it's going good now.
Good stuff. And then we're also joined with Jack Collier. He's just graduated from DCU. And Jack actually talked to us when we carried out a survey with Spark Market Research 3 years ago during COVID, in the midst of COVID. And you really were experienced that college life online, weren't you, Jack?
Yeah, I started with the whole in my kind of front room, looking out the window and then trying to figure out, am I going to be in college? Am I not? You go from 1 week to another and the entire curriculum, it seems like, would change in front of you. And I had that whole transition from being in home and then being in college, but also playing catch up and trying to do double the work in half the time.
And did that continue for you had another 3 years left, I think, when I was talking to you. Did that continue for most of your college experience?
It pretty much did, yeah. When I spoke to you last, it was year one. Mm-hmm. And everything was at home and it seemed to be okay. And the general consensus was, we have it under control. We'll deal with this all next year. It'll all be fine. And by the time we came into year two, the penny had dropped where it was a thought of, we're drastically behind on everything. all the practical elements you could have had, we're going to have to just forego that and we're going to have to get stuck into theory. And then by the time it comes to third year and it's final year, the practical you're meant to know, we're just going to hope you'll have figured that out because we've given you the theory. So it was a bit like 1 + 1 didn't really equal 2. Okay. They kind of just made one answer and we had to really figure it out as we went along. A lot of people suffered from it. There was a very sporadic range of grades. Some people were okay. Some people really did not benefit from it at all.
Okay, I can imagine. And will we break down some of those that came up from the survey then about education? A lot of people feeling quite stressed about their academic experience, aren't they?
Yeah, so we asked people just in 3 words to kind of write down how you felt your education, your experience of education was. And the first one that came out was fun, which is good to know.
Yeah, that's great to know.
But stressful was the second one, and kind of things like long, hard, challenging coming out. But of course, interesting and good. I think there's a definite mix, and I suppose it's so dependent on your situation. You know, some people were probably living at home anyway for college, might not affect them much, and different courses, like Jack said there, if you have practical elements that you just couldn't do, like that's mm-hmm. crazy. Whereas I myself did maths, it was more theoretical, so I didn't lose practical elements, I just lost the kind of social side of things, mm-hmm. I'll say.
Of course. And we're talking about 18 to 28 year olds, so this really is your it's not your leaving cert experience, it's your academic experience, when really it's a rite of passage, you're leaving home for the first time, or should be leaving home for the first time. So as we've seen, the main word there was fun, wasn't it? But stressful came in there, and interesting, good, long and hard were also in there too. I think we can all say that about our college experience anyway. Now, Lily, compared to Jack, you had a completely different college experience, didn't you? Because you, when COVID started, you were doing your junior cert, is that right?
Yeah, so when it was March 2020, yeah.
Yes.
And I remember we were sitting in CSVE, and I remember the teacher got a notification on his Apple Watch, and he was kind of flustered, and he was like, "Oh no, it's nothing." And afterwards, we kind of went out into the veranda, and all of a sudden, it was like nothing we've ever seen before. It's a conversation that we'd often bring up, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, school's closed! School's closed for 2 weeks!" And little did we know, really. So, my junior cert got cancelled, and I suppose I was a bit unfortunate with my whole TY experience. I didn't really get to make, like they say, oh, you make new friends in TY, you're brought into a new class. Like, we were 2 metres apart, we were separated. So it was kind of hard in that sense. We didn't get to go on the trips, I suppose, to Manchester and to another resort, Delphi. So we missed out on that part. But I was lucky to have my leaving cert go back to normal, and I was lucky to be able to go into college and have that normal experience.
As normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a really stark comparison to you, Jack, in 4 years that it changed over to that. We also talked to people about university and where they were living, and more than half of people in university are living at home, and a lot of commutes there as well, Anne, isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, public transport is the top way that people commute to college. I would say if you broke that down now by county, things would be very different. Mm-hmm. In the southeast, that's 30%, 29%. So, you know, I'd say the majority of those up in Dublin where you can commute, you know, it's more difficult down here and walking. So 43% of people in the southeast say they walk, whereas it's 36% in the kind of overall picture. So, yeah, kind of different across the country there again.
Mm-hmm. And again, has an effect on your college experience. And Jack, what you were saying about remote learning, does that mean that you were mostly at home during your college time?
I actually was in a strange scenario where I had done my leaving cert in 2020. I say done loosely. I got given a free pass and got given my accredited mark, and off we went. And we were told, look, it's all sorted. You'll be back in, no problem. We have a plan for this. So I had signed a lease. I had moved out of home. I had moved up to Dublin, and it was my day. I arrived to my apartment and I had collected my keys. We were told, we're going to go back on all of that. It's looking like you're going to be at home for the next year, but I have just put a deposit down and signed a lease. I was holding my keys when I found out.
Okay.
So I had to do the remote learning from an apartment where I could see my campus, and it was just how it was. But aside from that, it may as well have been at home because I couldn't go onto campus. It was all closed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And then you're in Maynooth. So
yeah, I was fortunate enough. I missed out on the on-campus accommodation, but I was fortunate enough with True Connections that I got digs, so I'm living just a few minutes up the road from the campus now. I am a bit lazy enough, and I decided to get the leap card and hop on the bus to bring me from outside the stop, outside the house, and bring me down to college. So I do, I suppose, sometimes commute down on the bus, but like, I was very, very fortunate, especially like in the circumstances of Maynooth being kind of small and only having limited certain amount of spaces for first years incoming. So in that sense, I am lucky, as one of my friends, he lives in Leixlip, so he has to either get the train or the bus. And obviously, trains are very reliable in all fairness, but the buses either don't stop for you because they're too full. And like, you'd have people coming in from Dublin and the surrounds as well. So it really is difficult for, like, I know I was just lucky really, but in that sense, there is many other people that really aren't.
So. Yeah, and they're quite unusual compared to our survey. And even as my experience as a lecturer, the grand majority of my students are living at home and commuting. And it's the same here with the Spark Market Research Survey. 55% of students are living at home, 50% in the southeast, and then 61% elsewhere. And then others in shared accommodation and others on college campus. And again, that has an effect on your mental health and your, you know, ability to start your life as people, a lot of people do when they're 18. So some really interesting results there. And, you know, that really brings in the cost of living crisis and accommodation and all these things that we experience. We're going to leave it there on education. In a few minutes time, we're going to talk mental health and lots of discussions there with this survey. So we'll go through those with Anne. And we're also going to be joined with a member of Jigsaw, the National Centre for Youth Mental Health in Ireland. That is coming up next.
My so-called Beat Life research is exclusively conducted by Spark Research Company and is co-funded by Commissioun na Mban. My so-called Beat Life.
That's what we were doing. We're going through the My So-Called Beat Life survey with Anne, who is from Spark Market Research, and they're the people who carried out our survey. I'm also joined in studio by our student, our voice of young people, Lily. That's what you are right now. And that is Lily Kennedy. She's just finished first year in Maynooth. What are you doing in Maynooth, did you say to me?
Media studies. So I've just undergone my first year.
Also on the line, we are joined with Mike Mansfield. He is the Director of Communications at Jigsaw, and Jigsaw is the National Centre for Youth Mental Health in Ireland, and he's going to be going through some of the survey and what we asked people about how they felt about their mental health. And we asked a lot, didn't we, Anne?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's see, where did we start? So a third say their mental health has gotten worse since the pandemic, and worse for women in particular. So do you want to talk us through some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, overall, 33% saying their mental health has gotten worse since the pandemic. Particularly for women, it goes up to 39%, and not so much for men, 25%. We do generally kind of see that in our work, thus that women kind of have a more negative effect. We also asked people the emotions that they felt daily over the previous 2 weeks, and the top three that came out were stressed, anxious and overwhelmed. That was followed by happy, and then another two, worried and frustrated, kind of negative ones. And again, women kind of more highly skewing towards those negative emotions and men towards the happy ones.
Okay. And Mike, you've seen some of those survey results. Would that kind of tally with what you're seeing at Jigsaw? And of course, you offer free confidential expert advice to young people between 12 and 25. Are those sort of emotions that you feel are up there?
Yeah, they would. Hi, Orla. Hi, Anne. Hi, Lily. Yes, in a word, we would certainly, in terms of, firstly, I think in terms of the emotions that we see every day across our services, while every young person that comes to us comes with a different story and a different background, certainly those feelings of stress and anxiety that kind of overwhelmingness, I think that is certainly, that is a theme that is coming through more and more. COVID and the measures kind of taken to contain it definitely took a direct hit on some of our more basic psychological drives. So that, you know, that need for closeness and relationships, the need for autonomy, independent decision making, direction, etc. They were all sort of under attack, and I think once they're attacked, it's kind of really difficult for us to sort of get it back and to rebuild that resilience. So the fallout was certainly felt probably more immediately in the first few years, or kind of, you know, maybe last year we certainly would have had some some challenges around the social reintegration, the message that now it's fine, back out you go, you know, back and reestablish those friendships or relationships that were lost. But we are seeing increased resilience. We're hearing the C word less in the session rooms.
Okay.
The COVID word is less of a theme, but certainly nothing in the data that would strike us as being anomalous with what we see day in day out across the country.
And of course, it's hard to resonate if you're in a different part of your life. But if you're a young person and about to start off in your life, and you're just suddenly being told to stay at home, it's only really now that we're seeing the effects of that, of not having those rites of passage.
Absolutely, and often when people talk about young people in COVID, they talk about that disruption to education and that where they were educated at home and stressed. But actually, for us, what we see is the establishment. Some of those years are really important in the establishment of friendships and connections and romantic relationships if you're in that certain age. And those rites of passage, those milestones, you know, do a decent leaving cert, do a decent junior, hit these key milestones that are massively important. And when you take all them away, a lot of young people are left with the sort of, well, what else is there and what do I go after now? So I think that we would have seen a lot of, I suppose, head scratching and confusion, and I missed all these things, and people feeling like they were a bit forgotten in all of this.
You'll be glad to hear, though, Mike, that 21% of millennials said they would talk to a mental health professional, and then 13% in the Gen Z section too. Do you feel people are more willing to talk?
We'd like to think that the work of Jigsaw and indeed many other organisations around stigma reduction, I think that message about it's okay not to be okay has worked. It's landed. I think particularly the awareness, the literacy, the knowledge among young people in mental health, and their openness to seek help is higher than ever before. If we look at the number of young people that came to us last year, we've seen a 20% increase, and that 20% increase is kind of a year-on-year growth. So there's two ways of looking at that. Demand continues to increase here. You know, there's something not quite right here, or it is that actually more and more young people are open to reach out, are seeing the likes of us as being an approachable, accessible service, and are just coming to us and asking for help. So it's really encouraging that the debate, the discourse on mental health is far more open. And I think what probably is needed now is that services, both at a statutory and non-statutory level, need to catch up a little bit. Mm-hmm,
totally. Well, listen, you have loads of hubs for Jigsaw, and the one nearest here in the southeast is based in Thurles in County Tipperary. Okay. But you are at the National Centre for Youth Mental Health in Ireland. How can young people get in contact with you if they want to?
Yeah, well, the easiest, I mean, just to say, while we have, as you mentioned, we kind of work out of 14 different locations across the country. Unfortunately, the Southeast currently is not one of them. So while we don't have a physical service in the area, there are a range of online mental health and supports that are available to everybody in the country. They're accessible through jigsaw.ie, so you have access to our immediate live chat service. There's group chat, there's lots of resources and supports and hopefully enough material there to support a young person or indeed their mum and dad who might be going through a bit of a tough time at the moment.
Mike, thanks a million for joining me and talking us through some of those results.
Not at all.
Okay, so some interesting points there from Mike, and lots of things came out in this survey. People in their early 20s less optimistic. I hate to hear this, Anne.
I know, it's terrible, really. Like that 20 to 22 bracket, 15% saying they're not optimistic. And then across the other ages, it's kind of 7, 3, 4%. So not as bad. But I suppose when you think about it, 20 to 22, you would have been 18-ish when COVID started. Like that's just, you know, there's no good outlook there. I mean, I feel hard done by. I was 20 when it started, but at least I had already kind of gotten out of home and made my new friends and kind of settled up in Dublin a bit. But like, you're kind of almost itching to get out at that stage. You kind of spend 6 years going, do your leaving cert and look forward to college and all of this. And then it's like, oh no, back in your box. Like, you can't blame them, I suppose.
Totally.
They're probably nearly traumatised. I think you'd be waiting for the next thing to happen. You'd be looking forward to things in life and then going, oh, but I better better not get too excited just in case something happens.
Just in case. Now, Lily, I'm not asking you to represent every person in the Gen Z bracket, but you're a fairly positive person, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I try to look on the brighter side of things, really. But, like, I do feel we were definitely a bit hard done by, but I feel we were among the luckier. Like, I did get to... Like, really, the only thing that we missed out on was missing out on the state exam. Like, I didn't get to do a state exam until I did my pre-leave and cert exams. So that was a bit stressful and whatever. But I feel like because I have been able to settle into college, meet new friends, and I hasn't been affected by the likes of COVID, not being able to meet new people, like, I feel like I have been one of the luckier ones. Now, definitely, I do think at the time when I was in transition year and I was going into fifth year, I was like, how the hell am I going to do the leaving cert? When really it was just a matter of, it is what it is now. You have to look forward to, like, there's no looking back now, and just accepting what it was, really, I suppose.
Okay. And I suppose you're back socialising and back, you know, having a community. But another result from the survey is that people prefer to socialise at home or at a friend's house. Yeah. Pubs and bars were sixth on the list, only 34%. Do you find that?
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely. Like, every so often we would go out on the weekend and have a few drinks, no doubt about it. But, like, if we were saying to the girls, it'd be a text message into the group chat and say, whose house are we going to kind of tonight? We just go to the house, maybe get a takeaway.
Is that a money thing?
Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest. I suppose it would be. If you're a tight on money, you'd be saying it. Like, you wouldn't be suggesting to go to the pub with a fiver in your account. But, like, I definitely do think that we definitely are more conscious, and maybe throughout the college year we definitely are a bit more conscious, like, we're going out and stuff. And maybe in the summer now that we're back working, I suppose we might splash the cash a bit more. But I do feel that it's just very easy going. At the same time, if people want to go out, they want to go out. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you don't. I think that's dependent on you and dependent as your friend group. And you are who you are with your friends, you know.
So your tribe.
Who you surround yourself with. So I feel it's up to each individual, but definitely, yeah, money could be a factor, yeah.
We've lots to get through. We're going to talk social media and politics in the last part of our survey. And we're going to talk about the fact that this breaks my heart a bit as a graduate of journalism, that 72% of people source their news from social media. That means TikTok and Facebook and Instagram. We'll do that after this.
My so-called Beat Life research is exclusively conducted by Spark Research Company and is co-funded by Commissioun na mBan. My so-called Beat Life.
We are back for part three of the results of our Beat Life survey conducted by Spark Market Research and co-funded by Commissioun na mBan. I am joined in studio by Lily Kennedy, a third level student from County Waterford. Anne O'Dwyer is here as well from Spark Market Research. She's been talking us through some of the survey results, and I'm also joined by Jack Collier, who is a recent graduate of DCU and he is working in Dublin at the moment. And we were going to talk the mishmash that is screen time and politics, and some funny results here, Anne, aren't there? We talk about Mr. Beast and Conor McGregor and Micheál Martin.
Absolutely. So we just kind of decided to throw this in just to see what would happen, I suppose, and I'm glad we did. We just picked kind of six randomers, I suppose. We picked Leo Varadkar, Conor McGregor, Ryan Tuberty, Mr. Beast, Micheál Martin and Olivia Rodrigo. We showed the respondents six pictures and said, name these, please. Just type in the names, whatever. And I think, yeah, the big takeaway was that 63% could name Mr. Beast and only 56% could name Micheál Martin. Luckily, 83% did recognise Leo Varadkar, 82% recognise Conor McGregor, so Leo just ahead there, and 65% Ryan Tuberty and 49% Olivia Rodrigo, which I personally was surprised by, but maybe that's just my personal interests.
Now, Lily and Jack, I presume that you would be able to name both media students and graduates, that you would be able to name Micheál Martin over Mr. Beast, I presume.
I'd hope so anyway.
I would hope so as well. What about you, Jack?
I want to say yes, but on the spot, I feel like my brain would buckle. I don't know.
That multimedia degree has stood to you, Jack, hasn't it?
Oh, it's solid as concrete, I tell you what.
We also went out in the streets because part of the survey was asking young people where they got their news from. And where were the most places then, Anne?
They were So at the top of the list was social media at 72%, a little bit higher in the southeast, 76% saying that's okay. Where they get it from. And then followed by friends and family at 54% and Google 49%.
Okay, not a newspaper or a television news report to be seen. Okay.
Only one in five saying they consult newspapers.
Okay. Rachel Dunphy from Beat News went out onto the streets in the southeast to ask people that very question, where do you get your news from? And here's what some young people from the southeast had to say.
My so-called beat life.
Probably like TikTok or Facebook.
And why do you think you go to them rather than like watching the RT news or a newspaper?
I'd just be watching it and it just come up really. Like, I don't really watch the news. Like,
and do you think that like it's like the news is like they're aiming it towards like older people, like people in their 40s and 50s?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
And do you think you'd be able to recognise like different politicians?
Nah.
Well, they did say that like I think it's 89%. So like 9 out of 10 people knew who the president was. Mm. Do you know who the president is?
Michael D. Higgins.
Yeah, he's relevant.
Why do you think he's relevant?
I don't really like, you just see him on TikTok and stuff like that, like trying to make himself relevant. Like.
Where would be the first place you'd go to get your news?
Facebook.
And why Facebook?
It's just the handiest, rather than reading the newspaper.
And what about yourself?
Facebook or TikTok.
TikTok. Why TikTok?
Because it's like handier than trying to read a newspaper or see it on television.
And you feel like it's like you'll get it like quicker if you look on Facebook or TikTok.
Yeah, I agree. Same.
The new research came out this morning saying that more people in their 20s recognise YouTubers or like TikTokers than politicians. I think it was more people recognise Mr. Beast than like Micheál Martin or something. Would you be the same?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No interest in politicians.
I think the politicians target older people rather than younger people.
Yeah.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat.
Now, I'm trying to have a little bit of empathy here because I think at 18 I wouldn't have been able to name who the Taoiseach was in the government then. But also, part of the survey was that most people don't know who they're going to vote for in a general election. Jack, as someone who, as we said, studied multimedia, do you feel that there is a bit of a disconnect between politics and young people?
I do, and listening to the results of the survey, on paper initially they do seem odd and they seem strange, but when you dissect it, I actually think it's exactly where it should be, because it's the nature of where you get your news from. Everything we see is personalised and targeted towards you. The young people, I understand the Mr. Beast thing. He is up there, if not the most subscribed person on YouTube as a platform, and that's a huge majority of young people where they spend most of their time and they get their information, be it leisurely or on purpose. And Olivia Rodrigo being some, like, you have a target audience for music. Mm. People aren't directing themselves in towards a news site where you would get, mm-hmm. let's say, verified and sourced material. So it makes sense to me. It's just more of a showing of how little people, I suppose, go to verified and vetted sources for their information.
Mm. And Lily, yourself, would your algorithm on social media even show up those sort of news sites like Jack was saying?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I would be a bit of an oldie now at heart, and I would turn on the news maybe at 5:30 or 6:00, and I would just purely because of my interests, I suppose. But like, other than that, I'd be scrolling away on TikTok. Maybe something might come up about Taylor Swift or some news in the UK or in America, or I suppose Facebook too, and some of the girls that laugh at me, I suppose, as well with Facebook. I do love a bit of Facebook. I do love the Irish Independent updates every so often too.
Now we move on to something completely different, and that is screen time. Not completely different, since people are getting all their information from those screens. Shocking, but not completely shocking what we thought. Let's talk about young people and screen time, Anne.
I think, nothing really surprising here. So we kind of set this up to put people in a trap, to be honest. We said, how much do you think is a healthy amount of screen time to spend on your phone per day? And on average, people said 4.1. They typed it in, we averaged it up, that's fine.
4.1?
4.1 hours a day.
Okay, yeah.
So then the next question was, go into your settings and tell us what your screen time is on average per day. And the average was 6.3.
Wow.
So a little bit higher. And then we kind of took it a step further and we were able to see how many people actually had a higher screen time than they themselves considered healthy. And it was 78%.
Okay.
So there's no telling how much more screen time they were spending than they kind of think is healthy. But I mean, 78 is a lot. And then subsequently, we kind of asked them, were they embarrassed? Were they shocked? Were they surprised? 22% said they were embarrassed. 20% said shocked. 8% were pleasantly surprised they didn't use their phone too much, which I think is nice. And 47% said it was about what they expected. So they know they're using their phone more than they probably should be.
Okay. So the average is 6 hours. Is that right? That you came up with? Okay. Wow. So that's what, a quarter of your day. Does that tally, Jack, with what you're using your phone for, do you think?
Unfortunately, I agree. It's not a surprise to me, but it also doesn't. Yeah, it's like I work in a job where I come in and I look at screens all day. It's the nature of what I do. Throughout my degree, I was looking at screens. And then in your time off, when you want to get away from the screens, you go onto your phone and you're on a screen more. Yes. You combine all of it between a Mac, a phone, work. I honestly think it comes up to around 11 hours for me, and that's ridiculous. Mm. But it also kind of comes down to me a bit of the nature of what the screen time is. Some of it is just mindless scrolling, some of it's work. You can break it down, but I doubt it's any good for your head. But I'm not surprised as well.
Yeah. What about you, Lily? How's your screen time?
I definitely do think that COVID impacted all our screen times, really. Mm-hmm. But like at the end of the day too, it's part of our life now, social media is. It's a part of our work. Like, wherever you go, you're not going into a place where it doesn't have a laptop or it doesn't have a phone. It's, but even now, like, there's no landline. You'd ring on WhatsApp, or it's very rare to even see a landline in a house anymore. So,
Anne, yeah. I know you're here as a member of Spark Market Research, but tell us about your screen time.
Oh, it's
as
awful.
A 24-year-old.
I would say it's as bad as anyone's now. Like, there's just, I mean, I'm here at my laptop in front of me. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I wouldn't even consider that screen time, man.
Yeah.
I just consider the phone, and that's fairly bad for me, so. Some really interesting results there from Spark Market Research, co-funded by Cumasun Naman. We wanted to look at attitudes of young people post-COVID, and where we got some interesting results, some very negative results, some positivity there as well, Anne, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the purpose of these things is to look forward. We're saying, what's going on? How can we deal with it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not to preach everything is terrible and everyone's depressed and we're all stressed and overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. No, it's to say, look, this is where we are. Things are moving forward. We're going further away from COVID. Mm-hmm. And now we know that this is the state of things. We can do something about it. And I even think the smallest thing of reaching out to your friends, saying, mm-hmm. how are you feeling today? You know, it's just to be aware of it and just kind of every so often just tap in, put down the phone, and maybe look up some politicians.
Yes, please do. Well, listen, that was our survey, my so-called Beat Life from Spark Market Research, co-funded by Cumasun Naman. Thank you so much to you and from Spark Market Research for coming in and going through those survey results with us. Some of those survey results, because you really went through a whole gambit of information. That is Anne O'Dwyer from Spark Market Research. Lily Kennedy, thank you so much for coming on as well. And Jack Collier as well. Thank you so much.
My so-called Beat Life research is exclusively conducted by Spark Research Company and is co-funded by Cumasun Naman.